were to wear. So if you're, next time you're in Chinatown having dim sum, ask for Bobby. Otherwise, he'll probably serve you some little stale jasmine tea that Caucasians like to drink. But all this is changing now, and we have some access to wonderful pu'er teas. We have over 300 my oldest pu'er goes back to the 60s, and I was living in Nepal at the time with the Tibetan refugees, and with the Tibetans, I didn't know it, but all the teas they drink are pu'ers. And I still have one of those pu'ers that I bought in 1969. It's a Tibetan mushroom, and it's been kicking around for many years, but it still has some interesting life to it. So basically, there's two main styles of pu'er, the green pu'ers and what they call the cooked pu'ers, or shou-cha. Means cooked, but they don't really cook it like you would a vegetable or something. It means it's been forcibly aged through the process of steam and heat. And they have what they call secret techniques for creating the appearance and the taste of a really aged pu'er. But it's different. It's not the same. The best aged teas are still the green ones, which you buy in a raw state, and then you age them. So I'm not sure which teas we're tasting today. But
So the teas that we have lined up for today are, we'll start with some of the non-pu'er teas that are part of the Phoenix Collection. So the first we have is the David's Green Private Reserve, which for the green tea lover is an extremely fine green tea. It's a bud leaf,
just
right?
The bud, yeah.
Just the bud. I love this one myself. Very, very excellent, refined green flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, for green tea drinkers, this is about as interesting as you can get, for my taste. It's made from a varietal which is very slow growing in China, and it almost fell out of use because the farmers didn't like to plant it. Too low production, too slow growing, and the price was too low. So this is when I came along, and I started buying up everything I could find in this style of tea. And now there's a little bit of a renaissance going on with it. But when you taste the tea, we should probably get one going. You want to just brew it?
Yeah, please.
When you taste this tea, you're going to find a very unique taste and a very clean taste. Now, these are made from just the buds. They do have lower price teas with the same varietal, which I'll be bringing in the spring, which will have leaf and bud. But this is just the buds. That's all I brought in this time. So it's a very forgiving tea to brew. You can't go wrong with it. If you let it oversteep, it's not going to get bitter or astringent. It'll get strong. But you can play with it. It's a very friendly tea. It likes a little experimentation. It likes, you know, a light steep, long steep, small quantity of tea, large quantity. You can play with it, and it'll keep going and going. So if you don't get the cup you want on the first infusion, make some adjustments, and the second infusion, I think, will be more to your liking.
When do the buds come out? I mean, what is the
It's
is
later
spring?
Than most varietal. It's spring. Uh-huh. It's later. Yes. It's one of the last teas to bud out.
Oh, okay.
Depending, the seasons are changing every year, just like the rest of the world. So no one knows how the it's going to play out in the future, but right now this tea is picked around mid-April, whereas a lot of the early varietals are picked mid-March. So notice the aroma on the tea when you get it. It has almost a grassy... well, see what you think. It's pretty unique. So that's the one green tea we're offering now.
Next is the
Tea Kuan Yin. Quick question.
Yeah, in Japan in spring, they also pick the tops of the plants for their early spring tea in Japan. Is that quite different than picking the buds?
Well, that would be the top of the tree, the buds. The buds form first on the outside of the bush because that's where the sun and the energy is hitting the plant. So the lower quality would be underneath with the immature buds or, well, the immature buds, if you like. They don't do... In China, what they do in Japan, where they cover the plants up to get more of a shaded appearance.
But
some of the farmers do is they plant bamboo around them to increase the shade, if it's a type of varietal that responds to more shade. There are about 2,000 different varietals in China, different varietals of tea. Outside of China and the rest of the world, maybe three varietals is all we're tasting, and that includes the Liptons and the Twinings and everything grown in Argentina and the Cameroons and Indonesia. Huh. These are all pretty much from the same varietals or hybrids of those varietals, which were brought out of China in the 19th century.
Okay. Need some more.
A lot of the varietals you find in China are isolated in very remote geographical areas, and they don't do so well by transplant. Or when they do, they seem to take on another form. Probably from the Tara has the most influence on the tea plants. So... I think we'll all be getting a taste of the green.
Yep.
When they did the buds, that was what white tea was.
It's white tea is made from a different varietal. It's a different process.
Oh, okay.
In fact, it's hardly processed at all. The main difference with white teas is the leaf isn't rolled, whereas all green teas, you have to roll the leaf.
So even this... special green has a rolled leaf?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they roll it, but very carefully. That's why you see the bud intact. You know, if they're hard on it, then you get a lot of broken buds and it lowers the quality. But if you do it very carefully, it stays intact.
What temperature did you use to brew this, to do this green? Is this what, like one?
We did 175.
Oh.
And I preheated the cup so that the container so that we didn't lose temperature, but
the cups are not preheated.
Yeah,
that's a good temperature for this tea, and you could go up even a little bit higher, and it's not going to destroy the tea as it does with, you know, if you have a very high grade dragon well, you definitely don't want to use boiling water on that. You know, it'll destroy it.
I think that's why so many people.
And a lot of the very delicate buds will be destroyed by higher temperature. But this is a little bit more hardy. It'll withstand, you know, I could take it up to 185, even 190, it'll be okay.
How long can everyday loose tea last? Everyday loose tea?
Well, it really depends on the storage conditions.
Like in a tin can, in a cupboard?
Well, optimum, you have the tea stored in an airtight container. And that's it. An air airtight container.
Yeah, start on the oolong
airtight
now.
Airtight means you can put that container underwater and you're not going to see bubbles come out. That's airtight. And that kind of container you could refrigerate and keep that tea fresh for a year or longer. Now, the danger is when you take it out of refrigeration, you've got to let it warm up to ambient temperature, or you're going to get immediate condensation, and condensation is the one thing that kills tea the fastest. You know, you could do a lot to tea as long as it's kept dry. Of course, with pu'erhs, all bets are off because you can do everything to pu'erhs that you can't do with other teas and not destroy them.
Do you still store your loose pu'erhs airtight? Would you, like a fermented one, like a cooked one, would you just kind of leave it open?
No, I wouldn't leave it open, but you could put it in an airtight if the tea is already dried and the taste is where you like it and it doesn't need to breathe. And you could tell when it needs to breathe if you brew it up and it has just too strong of aroma.
The fermentation maybe too.
Well, or for whatever reason. But normally you store pu'erhs in a container that will breathe, but not too much. So a non-vitrified ceramic container is perfect. And when I say non-vitrified, it's not... you could put water in there and have it slowly weep out the side. You could touch the side. This is a good container. And the top of this container, by the way, has a lid on there that's porous, so that allows it to breathe as well. But teas need to breathe.
So right now I think Stuart's brewing the... Tiquan Yin from the Phoenix Collection.
Okay, I think everyone's probably heard of Tiquan Yin or Monkey Picked. Tiquan Yin directly means Iron Goddess, if you translate that. Mm. And it's one of the 10 famous tributees of the 18th century. And deservedly so. It's made from its own varietal, the Tiquan Yin varietal. It has a very unique aroma. It's very floral. And this particular one is exceptional. This is made by one of the tea kings, one of the tea masters that was chosen for their skills in making this style of tea. And again, smell the aroma on this when it comes by. It's very green. In China, they like the Tiquan Yin on the green side, very lightly oxidized. And it gives an aroma that's quite different than the baked, fully oxidized oolongs, which are more baking. You lose the floral quality. It can be interesting, but you lose the floral quality. This one has the best qualities of the classic competition grade teas. Mm-hmm.
Give that to Daniel. So here it comes.
The name is overused. You'll hear a lot of people saying Tiquan Yin, Monkey Pit, but you got to taste it and compare, and then you'll see if it's really the genuine.
We're often asked if real monkeys actually pick the tea.
Very frequently asked that.
For whoever has studied China and you see the cormorant birds, they go fishing, and it seems, oh my God, how could they train a bird to go fishing for them? I feel if they could train birds to go fishing, they could certainly train monkeys to pick tea.
We actually had a customer come back and tell us that for the tourist trade, he actually saw a monkey train that was trained to go up and take the
leaf
and come back down with it. So,
when you see the teas in the Wuyi Mountains, you could understand why they would need monkeys to pick these teas. But the reality is, where Tiquan Yin is grown, they don't have those high, formidable peaks, mountain peaks. It's very gentle land there. So, no, I don't think they used monkeys ever to pick this tea, but it would surprise me if they used monkeys to pick other oolongs in northern Fujian, where you would really need monkeys to get to some of those teas.
Are they all grown in altitude, or is that a whole different tea?
Well, they're all grown about 800 to 1,000 meters. In some areas, they grow up to 1,200 meters. Those seem to be the best teas, and the best teas are also grown organically and natural and in good soil. This seems to be critical for this style of tea. And I would go to the tea tastings, the tea competitions, every year. And I know the organizer of these competitions and have for the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. So I've got to meet, you know, all the tea kings, all the people. I participate in the competitions. I taste everything that comes through. And I've got to learn what they appreciate in the tea Kuan Yin. And now I should say it's the same thing that I enjoy too. So this has those characteristics. What it doesn't have are the perfect leaves. So the appearance-wise, you're losing on this. And that's why I can buy this tea at a very affordable price, because they do have some broken pieces in there.
That's an interesting point, because for the quality of the flavor, this tea is wonderful. But you're right, you look at the leaves, and I might just pass it around.
Yeah, and smell as it comes around.
The smell is a little incredible.
Yeah.
It's like jasmine or
feather. Yeah.
Yeah. But the difference is nothing has been added to that. That smell that you get, that aroma, that's
true
from
smell.
The tea itself.
That's
wonderful. There's some more for you, dear.
Mm-hmm. I don't see any wrong with that. It looks just like tea leaves to me. That's why he's
running
the show.
They're not all the same size.
Thank you.
This is
the competitions are looking for this style in here. And
well, they're first looking at the aroma. With green tea, the judges put about 10% of the weight on aroma and about 30% on the appearance of green tea. So when you're drinking a very high grade green tea, like our private reserve there, you'll notice those buds are very even, they're very perfect. You know, that's one of the qualities they look for, because they often drink green teas in a glass. And they just put the leaf in there and put your water and you watch them dance up and down. But with oolong, they don't care about the appearance. So they rate it, but it's only about 10%. But they have about 30% on the aroma. So what makes the teas special is the balance between the aroma and the taste. Because you could find many tea Kuan Yin that has superb aroma, and you taste it, and there's nothing there, or vice versa. You could have a tea that has a wonderful taste, but there's nothing on the nose. So what the tea masters do is they make sure they have the balance between the two. And the aroma must be of a certain type. This has the qualities of a superb tea Kuan Yin.
What is it about the tea that makes the that you could have such a fine aroma but not have it a fine taste?
Well, it's just like an apple tree. You could have the same kind of apple, but this particular tree has a superb taste. You bite into it, it's so perfect. And this tree over here, it's the same varietal, but it's not quite there.
Could you describe what the tea master does to adjust these different qualities?
Yeah. They know their plants, and they keep them secret because they know which ones have the superb qualities. So when they're submitting teas for competition, they'll only pick that tea way out there in the mountain that has a southern exposure and it has the best soil. and they know that that particular tea has, you know, the right aroma. And then they'll pick another tree from a different place that has the best taste. So you do have a blend. And I always said, you know, I never sell blended teas. All my teas are pure leaf varietals. But I did a little story I wrote about these Ti Kuan Yin years ago when I brought my daughter to China with me.
I should point.
12 years old at the time. And as a 12-year-old, when she gets tired, she likes to let me know that. So we were at a tea competition, and it was the Ti Kuan Yin competition. And the judge, the main respected judge there, invited me to come and taste these teas with him, which was an honor. I would have come directly from the States, only do that and fly back again. I mean, that's how much I valued that experience. And so my daughter reluctantly comes along, and they make the teas, and they offered us a taste. My daughter says, "I don't want any." So I just leaned over and smiled. I said, "You drink that tea or I'll slit your throat." So no one lost face. And then but an interesting thing at that tasting was that Zhao Enlai, who's now, he's close to 100, maybe he's 99. He's the main guy, and this was 12 years ago, so he was in his late 80s. And he tasted this tea, and he was able to identify the proportion of those teas there from this tea's over here.
Lord.
So, wow. You know, I will never have that kind of palate, but he was very good at that.
So the next tea that we're passing out now is Golden Bilo.
Okay. We're moving on to a fully oxidized tea. First was a non-oxidized tea, and then we had a semi-oxidized tea, which is what an oolong is. And now we're going to a fully oxidized tea, which we know is black tea. In China, they know it as red tea, Hongcha. So what they call black tea is something completely different. So again, this is a very high-grade black tea. Notice the aroma. It has a very special aroma. If you like to add milk in your tea, you can do it with this tea. I would not suggest doing it with an oolong, just because even if you thought it tasted good, you're going to destroy the tea. You're going to destroy everything that most people value in an oolong if you put milk in it.
One thing with this tea that it reminded me of another tea we've had called Yunnan Gold.
Yeah, it's from the same province.
So this is that from Yunnan?
This tea is from Yunnan. It has similar qualities as a high-grade Yunnan Gold. It may even be made from the same varietal. I'm not sure. I will find that out this year when I visit the farm. And it's not an easy tea to find. I think there's only one farm that makes this tea. I've gotten several samples. Higher grades, lower grades, and they do vary, but the highest grade is actually difficult to get, and you have to be quick, because black teas have become very popular now in China.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas Pu'er's took the popularity stage 5 years ago, now it's black tea. So black teas are going up and up and up in price.
So interesting.
Yeah, we'll
but
see.
That should be better for the pu'er drinkers.
Yeah, are they going down?
They are going down, way down. Yeah.
There was a, wasn't there a speculators market with pu'er? Oh, like, yeah. Like there was it fraud. Was there was crazy, and the prices went to the roof.
Yeah, I almost stopped buying for about 2 years because all I could find was very low quality with a very high price. Mm-hmm. But every now and then something would slip in, and the. You have the Green Elephant, I think.
Yeah, we're going to try that.
Because that's one that somewhere. I found during the pu'er craze, and it's a great tea, and it's very reasonable price. So if you like a cooked pu'er, you can't go wrong with this one. Very, really good.
So we're now going to switch over to the pu'ers. Oh, you have a question?
This was the golden...
Bilo.
Yeah, okay. And it's a beautiful appearance. So maybe we
Well, let's pretty much do that.
Just to
I didn't pass around the special green too, so let me pass that around so you can look at a.
You know, it'd actually be nice to share the golden veal leaves.
Look at the difference! Oh my gosh!
One of the things about the golden veal that struck me is that I've loved the Yunnan Gold because it's a black tea. It has a very malty, rich flavor. But it's also kind of a heady flavor and a thick flavor, and the golden Bilo has that same malty character, but it's a very refined liquor, and it has the same, I think, benefit of the golden Yunnan, which is you can do multiple infusions of them. Mm-hmm. Many of the black teas you can do maybe two infusions and then you kind of passed it, but with this one you can do three or four infusions at least.
So I'm sending around the golden Bilo leaves as well, dried. They're really lovely.
Yeah, there's really no other tea in the world that I know of that looks anything like this. It's quite unique.
It has a wonderful fragrance, just even dry.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Any other? Oh, question. I'm sorry, I can't hear.
When you do multiple infusions.
Multiple infusions.
Is there a
particular?
Yes. Yeah. The question is, how do you deal with multiple infusions if you're not doing it at the same time?
Right.
Think of it like a cooked vegetable. If you cook up a pot of spinach and you're not going to consume it all right then and there, put it in the refrigerator until you want it the next time. And same with tea. You wouldn't leave that spinach sit out for 2 days in a warm kitchen. You're risking bacteria and other things that might not be good for the tea. So if you're not going to have it on the same day, then refrigerate it. But if you brew it up in the morning, you can leave it sit on the counter all day and have it again at night. That's fine. Nothing's going to go wrong with it in 6 hours or 8 hours. Question?
Just a general question on the teas. You know, lately in China, you see all the problems with their food, you know, pesticides coming out. Remember your movie, you had that issue with a lot of them. What is the state of that now? Is China kind of waking up to that? Are they growing that with less insecticides or pesticides?
Well, food is a little bit different situation. Food for export is a newer product that they're trying to develop for the export market. Tea is a traditional item that they've been doing the same for 1,000 years. So I would avoid summer-picked teas for the most part, because if they are green teas, the bugs will come out when the weather warms up, and that's when they spray. If you go after the real early pick teas, you're not going to have a problem with that. It's a complex situation, but because the EU community and Japan has put so much pressure on China to export clean tea, they really have to pay attention to it. Not America. We disbanded our tea inspectors years ago, and there were only two inspectors for all the tea coming in the country. And the senior inspector, Robert Dick, despised pu'er teas. Despise them. Nope, they're old, they're moldy. Can't let them in the country.
Oh.
So no pu'ers were imported as a pu'er under Robert Dick's reign. And I would argue with him, I'd plead with him, just try it. Nope, smells moldy. Smells old, can't let it in the country.
Just describe what makes a tea a pu'er.
What makes a tea a pu'er? It's got to be the right varietal. It's got to, technically it has to be from Yunnan. But that's a newer political guideline. And there's a big argument now whether Sichuan province next door or Guangxi province next door could make a pu'er. I sell other teas that technically are not pu'ers, but they're always sold with pu'ers. These are teas that benefit from aging. So you could ask 100 different experts what a pu'er is and probably get 100 different
answers.
They're always aged. So a pu'er is aged. It's what they call kill the green sashing. They don't fully kill the green. They allow it to slowly oxidize over the years. But there's also a unique bacteria and yeast that enters the process. What are you drinking now?
We're doing the green large leaf green pu'er.
Oh, now that's an interesting tea. Now this is one I purchased back in, I think it was 96.
95.
Yeah, well I purchased it in 96. And the tea was from 95. But it has legitimate age, and it's been in our cave in Lagunitas. So, 15 years now.
Yeah,
15 years. 15 years.
So this is uncooked.
Uncooked.
Oh, okay. You lived on.
This is a green pu'er. So, and it's still fairly green. I've got some teas that are 20, 25 years old, and they still show a hint of greenness. So, if someone's trying to offer you an old pu'er and they say it's green and it's fully dark, it probably isn't. Because when teas age naturally, they go through a gradual transition and they get more bronzy amber color rather than a deep brown or dark color.
How would the aroma and flavor of the teas taste change over the time it's getting?
It depends. It really depends on the tea, because you could take a bad pu'er and age it for 20 years and get a bad age pu'er. But if you age it a good pu'er that has good potential for aging and you take good care of it, then what's going to happen is that sharpness is going to leave, the astringency, it's going to take on a whole another character that approaches what you get in an oxidized or a cooked pu'er, but it's different. You still have the character of the green, the rawness, but it's mellowed out. And there's a sweeter finish to it.
So what do you think of this?
It's pretty green. Very smoky. Yeah.
It's very much like the Luan, I think.
Yeah,
which is a green.
Yeah.
That I like.
Actually, David said the other day when we were introduced to this tea that Luan is not actually technically a green pu'er. It's sort of like its own category, right?
It's what they call hicha, black tea. That's what they call black tea. So, there's so many Chinese that consider the Luan a pu'er, and it's sold on the same shelf with all their pu'ers, so you're not so wrong if you call it.
They told me it was pu'er.
Yeah.
all this time. Yep.
So the next tea we're going to try is a green tuocha with sticky rice.
Sticky rice, okay. This is something else. This is a green, again, this is a green puer, and I think it's about 6 years old now. But something else was done to the leaf. They've added what they call the sticky rice fragrance. And when you smell it, it's the aroma is of sticky rice. For those who've had sticky rice before, it has that character. But it's not from the actual rice. It's from an herb in China, which they seal up with the tea to impart the fragrance to the tea itself.
So just so you know how this tea is prepared, it comes in this little mushroom cap packaging called a tuocha. And it's usually good for one for a big cup that you can use over and over again, or one for a pot.
And you do take the paper off before shipping. Some people don't know that. They put the whole thing in.
Our biggest problem is when we have these out, most people think they're like candy or chocolate.
Rice candies, you know, you put them in your mouth and the rice paper melts.
That's.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that the smokiness processing of the tea, is that correct?
They don't intentionally add smoke, but and they vary even within a certain lot, because these are charcoal fired, and what they do is they make a fire, and if they put the tea on too soon, then they might get a hint of smoke in there. But usually that smoke will dissipate, you know, with subsequent infusions. If you steep it two or three times, the smoke will be less, and it's not always consistent. So, and by having the tea in a container that will breathe will also dissipate that part of the taste profile.
Okay. All right.
So which, this is the sticky rice.
This is the sticky rice tuocha.
I stuck it in the fridge.
Well, that may be a strong steep. One tuocha is enough for about a quart of liquid. So if it's too strong, just dilute it down or wait for the next infusion. But this is a unique taste. You won't find this tea very often. It's not very common.
It's like drinking rice.
But instead of what do you call it, southwestern ginmai cha.
Yeah. Smell this aroma. There's pretty much nothing else like it. In Chinese, it's called nyomi cha.
Is the rice in it?
Very unique.
Yeah.
Very unique.
But you get the health of the green tea in there. So,
so will this tea like a puer age well?
Yeah. Already after 6 years, I think it has a better taste now than it did when I got it. Yeah, it was much sharper when it was fresh.
When you say, how do you remember taste when you say 6 years ago? Do you keep records? Is there a certain language to
define? I remember taste very well. I may not be able to identify it by name, but I'll remember, that taste I had. That one of my favorite dragon wells that I had... Oh my gosh, 1996, 97, I have to check the dates. It was so good. I found a big bag of this, and I tried to buy some. It was the best dragon well I ever had, and I tried to buy some of that. And he said, it's already, it's already promised to someone else. So he gave me some after I pleaded for so long. He gave me a little bit, so I was able to drink that over the days. And then the next day I see in the newspaper that the person who I got the tea from was standing next to the president of Portugal, who was visiting China at the time, and that was a gift for the president. But this was back when Dragon Well teas were affordable. I mean, they were expensive then, but nothing like they are today. And this is from Lion's Peak. It has a very unique taste profile. And I know Dragon Well teas well enough, so I can tell if they're from Lion's Peak, if they're from Westlake, if they're from Fujingjiang, which is on the other side of the mountain, or if they're in other parts of Zhejiang Province. And Dragon Well is so much in demand that they bring huge amounts of tea in from other parts of Zhejiang and sell it there as local tea. And usually it isn't. It's like Kona coffee or something. The what they sell far exceeds the domestic supply. So Dragon Well is one of those teas you have to be careful with. Don't pay a lot of money because of the name. If you want to spend a lot of money on it, be sure it's because you really enjoy the taste.
So the next pu'er that we're tasting is the orange.
The wild orange.
Yeah, let me show you how this is packaged, because we've got these cute little... There's tea in a little orange container. You know, I'll pass it around for you to look at. If any of you who have tried the pomelo oolong, this is sort of in the same spirit.
Yeah, now this is a tea that you really want to open it up and let it breathe for a few days. It will really improve with the taste if you allow it to breathe, which is true with a lot of the pu'er. So if you keep it in a sealed container, you may want to just let it breathe before you steep it up.
By the way, I should point out that David was generous enough to bring along the breed that you've been enjoying.
Thank you. Fujian Wow. Beautiful. Very lovely.
What was the Chinese name?
International hair. We're international.
That
sticky rice pear. How long did you steep that?
I probably didn't steep it more than a minute or so. I put it in a little earlier. It might have gone a little extra because I was trying to break up the tuocha. Was that strong for you, or weak, or nice?
It looked like it might have been strong for some people, and it does steep very quickly, as do a lot of the green pu'ers.
Yes, and that's my ignorance, because usually a tuocha, like a black tuocha, takes a while to break up, and so I was trying to give it extra time, and then I noticed all of a sudden it was pretty much dissolved.
It had a little astringency to it.
Yeah. But that's a tea that... It will benefit from short multiple infusions, or put one piece in a big quart jar, which is what I do sometimes.
And then approximately how many infusions can you get out of like one of those little sticky rice?
Well, I get one steamer, one quart jar for one quart.
For one.
And sometimes let it steep for a half hour or so before
I I tried your recommendation on the black tuocha of putting it into a thermos bottle.
What'd you think?
And letting it stand over. It was great, but it was different. I was surprised that there was a depth or strength in the
maybe you should explain what it was overnight.
Yeah, so I basically what I did was on David's recommendation took a tuocha of black tea, so same shape. It was a black pu'er or dark pu'er. And dropped it into a thermos bottle filled with hot water and just screwed the top back on and left it.
Wow. Now, the important thing to remember is it has to be a glass thermos. Don't try and do that in stainless steel. No. Or if you do, you're going to change the taste considerably.
Stainless?
Stainless will change the taste of the pu'er. And try it. I mean, that's the best thing. Try it yourself. Try it in a stainless steel thermos and try it in a glass thermos. I think you'll be amazed at how different it tastes.
Does the steel that's tasting it, or is something that the stainless steel absorbed from whatever was there last time?
Say again?
Is the change caused by the stainless steel itself, or that the stainless steel absorbed whatever you had in there?
Oh, probably both. I mean, certainly if you've had coffee in there, you're not going to get that taste out very easily. But
for years, I
made my pu'ers in a stainless steel teapot. Years. And,
the English way.
I thought that's what it was about. And then one day, I steeped it in a clay teapot, and I thought I'd switch teas somehow.
Oh my God.
It was so different.
So which one is this?
And I never went back
the orange.
To using metal again. And the Chinese, you know, you can go into a restaurant and they're using stainless steel pot. But a real tea drinker or someone who's interested in the health benefits from herbs, you never allow herbs to touch metal. And the same with teas. If you're really going after the health benefits of tea, I wouldn't steep it in metal because something happens. There's a chemical reaction with the metal.
But that's not the case with a metal canister?
No, not if it's dry.
Metal canister's okay.
Not if it's dry.
This is the orange.
Is there another question?
Well, I was thinking of wine. And I often think of wine when you all are talking because it is such a similar, basis for taste experimenting. And I wonder if the wine property, because it is a fruit, has a similar reaction to steel or metal, or...
Susie, maybe you could answer that one. The question was, does the same thing happen with wine? If you put wine in stainless steel, are you going to get a change?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's just like using a very small wine glass or a big wine glass. You can really see the difference. But if you put wine into a different stainless glass, definitely, especially stainless steel, you get that kind of tinsel flavor. But, I think it's the... I don't know that everybody would notice it, but I wouldn't ever take like a copper or a stainless steel glass.
Not right now. He'll be back here in a moment.
I just bought some stainless steel wine glasses. I'm wondering. For camping and for, in your vehicle or in your boat, on a boat because they don't rain.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you're right.
Actually, I'll ask the question to the group.
Yeah.
So I was asking a question about the tea we're drinking now, the wild orange. David said it's a cooked pu'er, and the question about processing I have is the tea processed and then packaged in the fruit?
Yes.
Is the fruit fresh when it's packed?
Yes.
And then it's dried?
Yes. So there's two things happening. They pack it. The tea is already processed. They scoop out the orange, pack it, and then slowly dry it. And they also mix the pulp of the orange with the tea, so you get a little bit of that too. When they steep it, they like to break up everything, including the skin, the peel, which looks like a piece of leather. But you can steep that up with the tea, and it imparts a little bit of fragrance of its own taste.
That's really... And it's quite a wonderful combination. So the pomelo tea, which is a similar style, which is it's a tea, it's a dark pu'er that's packed in a pomelo skin.
Yeah.
I think you may have called that like a pu'er oolong or something like that. Is that?
There was one we had that was packed with an oolong style. The others are all pu'er.
Okay.
So yeah.
I was just wondering if that was like some sort of special.
Are you doing the next one?
I have one sheet. I'll start it. The next is the Black River Mountain Pu'er, and I'm just starting to brew that now. I loved this one when we tried it at a tea taste, and it's 1997. Any story on this one?
Story on this, it's. It's a tea from the Vietnam border in the southeast Yunnan province. and I wasn't able to find out the process because the person making this tea, he won't share the secret with anyone. It does have a very unique taste. It's wet stored, so it's very appreciated in Hong Kong. And this is a tea that I enjoy also as a thermos tea, steeped overnight in a thermos. So you can steep it very hard if you like. But it has some real nice character to it. Try it, see what you think.
So, sure. So with these teas, like particularly with the cooked fuers, would you say you can infuse them to however thick you want? They're not going to get astringent or over.
Yeah, and some people like a really light steep, so that's fine. I always rinse off the pu'er's first, just because, you know, this tea is 13 years old, and it just gets rid of some of the age and wakes it up. You don't sacrifice any flavor. In fact, you get better flavor if you kind of wake it up first and then steep it. It's a very healthy tea, pu'er's in general. Very good for digestion, hangovers, lowering cholesterol. They make all kinds of claims on this tea. But it's very good to settle the digestion, so that's why it dips in restaurants when you add a really rich,
I can get some more going.
Greasy meal.
Boiling.
I have a whole thing of 195 over there.
Can you dress it with hot water just like you threw it?
Yeah. Yeah, same.
So what I've been doing, I didn't draw attention to it, but I would put the leaves in the gaiwan, pour, just cover them with water, and then pour it off, and that would constitute the rinse. Mm-hmm. I think I've been pretty consistent, with one exception.
Yeah. And usually the tea kuan yin, they rinse off too, but only because that tea is picked at a very mature stage, so the leaf is very strong, very thick, and the varietal from that tea is very thick. So you need a really high temperature to kick it in. So they'll rinse it off to wake it up and preheat the pot or the gaiwan, and then
there's one more. So the
Like, so as a consumer, what's the best way to figure out your path?
Yeah, you know, with pu'er's, or with all teas, I always tell people there's only one thing you have to know about brewing teas, and that is there are no rules. You know, there's no proper way or right way to make tea. Every tea releases its flavor differently. Whether it's a young, tender leaf or a very old, mature leaf, it's going to release flavor differently. So really what you want to do is experiment on your own how you want that tea brewed. And new green pu'er's need a short steep because they'll put out too much flavor at one time. They're too astringent. But if you have a really old pu'er, like that 95 green, it'll hold up to a much longer steep. But see what you like yourself. Try it with a light steep. If it's not strong enough, let it go a little bit longer. If it's still not strong enough, let it go longer. If it's still not strong enough, put more leaf in there. And you'll find that place where you like the tea. And that's why I always recommend, with your daily learning of teas, always use the same size container, whether it be a gaiwan or a teapot, and then you really develop a relationship with that tea. You'll see how much leaf to put in, you'll know how long to let it steep, and all the factors that will determine the taste. But in general terms, the green pu'er's need a shorter steep, and they release their flavor more quickly than the cooked pu'er's. So, how do you like this one, Black River Mountain?
Wonderful. He likes the green
porter. David, you should
put that wet storage. Which is when you trip and fall on your face.
You're down there as a moldy leaf.
I'm going to pass this around, but be careful. It's still warm here. These are the leaves.
This is the Black
River.
The question is, I think, the difference between wet stored and dry stored, you know, how does it affect the tea? And,
not surprising, it's hot in the bottle.
You know, in speaking in very general terms, if you're trying to affect the change in the tea, then you, by increasing the temperature and humidity, you'll increase the rate of change. Some people like the dry storage, and it changes more slowly, but it changes at a level that's further off the earth. It doesn't have that strong earthy quality to it. So it's a matter of taste and yes, question.
The temperature that you used of the water for the cooked pomeros, that's a higher temperature.
Hot as you can get it.
Is that, and would you say that's a general rule, or can you do a little cooler? Or
it's a general rule. Certainly once the tea has woken up, you could use much lower water temperature and you'll still bring it out. Bring out the flavor.
But for the initial rinse?
The initial rinse, I'd use hot water.
So we used 208 degree water from the Zojirushi because it has a preset setting.
And if you're rinsing, I mean, some people rinse off green teas and other teas as well. And if you're rinsing off a green tea, I would use a much lower temperature. Even 140, 150 is okay, just to kind of wake it up.
So I'm about to take for our last tea of the last call. So the last tea that we're going to do is a green elephant cooked pu'er. This is packed in a bincha. Is that the term for the disc?
Uh-huh.
You can buy that in the disc, but we'll also sell it in by the ounce too, which is why I'm inaugurating this. But the thing I thought you'd be interested to know is, in terms of special equipment, this is a pu'er knife, courtesy of the Phoenix Collection. We're selling them here. They have the Phoenix Collection logo stamped on it. So be the first to own a pu'er knife.
And I must say, we stock maybe a dozen different pu'er knives. This is by far the best quality. It's made by an old knife company in this country. And it's carbon steel. It's indestructible. So, and it's so comfortable in the hand.
Now, is it made for this purpose, or is this like a letter opener or something?
Yeah. Oyster knife.
Oyster knife. There we go.
So if you have your favorite oyster knife.
So you can use it. So it's a multi-purpose tool.
Yeah, multi-purpose. Yes.
And a letter opener, too.
I don't know. And all I really am doing is breaking off enough for this pot here, which probably won't be that much.
Can you show us sort of about the amount in case we want
to? So
when you use this knife on a cake, you have to remember that the cake is pressed this way with the leaves flat. So when you break into a cake, go in from the edge and it'll separate. Very easy.
Well, I wish you had said that beforehand. I just went there. This one cake is actually this cake's a little easier to manage. And you think that would be enough? You think it's cool? So just so you can see how much I'm putting in there. I don't know if it's not that, it doesn't look like that much, but it's pretty packed tight. And in this particular case, particularly since it's a cake and there's little small pieces in there, I will do a rinse just to get some of the little small particulate matter out.
Why do they press it like that?
The leaves are flat.
Shelf life, or?
Why do they press tea?
Versus the loose leaf ones we've been.
Originally, it started out as a convenience for transportation.
For transportation.
Mm-hmm. Because the tea is transported on the backs of pack animals. Mm-hmm. And if you had a 20-kilo sack of tea, it's a huge sack like this, literally like this, and you can't transport much. And plus, you have a danger of up on the animals up on high passes, and the wind blows. It's like a sail on these animals. So by pressing it, you could take 20 kilos of tea and have it, you know, in this size pressing. So
it was basically for transportation, not because it changes the taste or it ages better or anything like that.
Yeah, this is debatable, but I think it was an accidental discovery that they found that by pressing teas, they aged the teas very nicely. They were able to mature the tea. Also, I should mention, you could use twice the quantity of leaf in a cooked Carrera than you would say for the green tea. Or even more than that, three times. A good pu'er should hold up to a really strong steep. And you could brew it up espresso straight. And this is one that is very tolerant of a long steep. So if you try this tea, I would encourage you to try it really strong and see how you like it. And then if it's too strong, just dilute it down with water. And a lot of Chinese do that. They brew it up almost like a syrup. The Russians did this with their samovars. You know, they had a very concentrated tea, and then the belly of the samovar was your hot water, which they add to it to dilute it down.
I like pu'er's very strong. I learned to like pu'er's very strong.
Yeah.
And they really do. They're almost like strong coffee, really good coffee. I like coffee.
What I find is it doesn't matter how strong I brew it, it's still quite drinkable. It's just a matter of the body and a really strong brew has this silky quality to the body that's a wonderful thing.
David?
Yes?
Question on long-term storage of bean jaws in this climate. I don't have a cave, so what would you recommend as the best way to store in this climate? Is this too dry for long-term storage?
A root cellar with good ventilation. And if you don't have a root cellar, think in terms of tea wants to absorb whatever is around it. So you have to be sure there's nothing strong smelling. Some cabinets are just kind of dank or too old, and that's not a good place. It needs some fresh air, but not too much, so that the tea doesn't just dry out.
What I have them in is like a cardboard box on a shelf in a closet, closed closet.
I'm not a good accompaniment to tea. And I learned that from the hard way, because some of my pu'ers were packed with clothes from Asia, and I shipped them back, and they took years to get rid of the clothes smell.
What was the clothes smell from? Was it from the chemicals in the clothes, or was it
when you walk in a closet, there's
new clothes. You're right. New clothes especially have all kinds of chemicals.
Well, and people, you have body odors and oils.
Yeah, and you know, at some point, if they use the mothball dye, that stuff is horrible. It'll get in everything, and it's so hard to get rid of.
So would a person with an ordinary house store something like that?
You could keep it in your kitchen.
But not in the spice cupboard, for example, because it might...
Maybe. It depends. You have to be careful of oils, oils like incense oils. You know how they make some incense with the bad... I don't like the oils they put in most incense. I'm very sensitive to that. But that would really penetrate the tea very quickly. So there's things like clove oil, which is also very strong, which I love on its own, but you don't want to put that near tea. But it's not so particular. I mean, you don't have to worry about it. If you have a cake that you're drinking all the time, just put it in with your spices or in your kitchen. It's probably not going to be a problem. But if you want to buy teas for aging and pack away for 5 years, then that's a whole different situation. You want to be sure the air stays fresh and clean. Don't worry so much about the temperature, but make sure the teas aren't wrapped up in plastic because they need to breathe.
How about a garden shed?
A garden shed might be fine.
It
might be
house.
Fine. If you have a place under the house that has some air circulation, and you could go under the house and it doesn't smell moldy, then it's probably fine. Teas are actually very forgiving. You just don't want to store them in a place that has bad smells.
How important is humidity? For long-term storage?
Depends on the tea and what you want to achieve. I would try storing it both ways and see what you like. Keep your humidity under 85%, or if you go up to 85%, be sure you have some ventilation coming through. If the ventilation is very slight, then keep the humidity under 70%. You want to have at least 50% humidity, or you're not going to get too much change. So even dry storage is not really dry, but it's 45-50%. That's pretty dry.
We generally are around at least 50% around here.
Yeah. But summers are hot and dry, and but the winters are fine. And
but winters in a heated house are often quite a bit lower than that humidity, unless you deliberately humidify it.
Yeah. There's no reason to keep the teas in the heat of the house if you're storing it for long term. You could. There's so many other places. Mm-hmm. Wine cellar should be fine. Humidor, a place where they keep fine cigars, perfect.
Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't store it with the cigars, would you?
Yeah, I would. I mean, the green cooler that we tasted, that has kind of a tobacco taste to it. And it wasn't anywhere near.
Yeah, let's put a little more.
You like that better than last one.
So what's everyone's favorite tea that we've tasted in the last hour? Go on.
Tiquan Yin.
What else? No favorites?
Yeah, the Private Reserve. The green.
Private Reserve green.
Black River.
Black River Valley? Yes.
Good
for
you. Really strong. Oh, yeah.
Black River Valley is a great one.
Any other favorites?
The Wild Orange Puer.
Wild Orange, good.
I like the Tiquan Yin.
The orange is
good. The golden Gilo.
Gilo.
Yeah.
Question about that tea.
Yeah.
It's rolled into, I think, little rings. Right?
You want to?
Well, traditionally it was done by hand. This is actually a black tea copy of the Bilo Chun from Jiangsu province. And they did the same style. I can't verify that it's all hand rolled, but I will find out this year when I visit. They've developed machines to mimic that, and so I can't say. It could all be hand done, but I'm not sure at this point. So, yeah, well, usually when we do tastings like this, there's always one tea that becomes someone's favorite, which just shows you how different our tastes are.
Yeah.
And that's part of the beauty of tea, is that we could enjoy so many different styles. And there's no right or wrong. There's no correct taste or whatever. There's always something that someone will like.
What's your favorite tea or area?
Probably the Phoenix Bird Oolongs as an area. When you said area, then I have to choose that. Because
you like the Oolongs better than the Pu'er's?
No. But you said favorite area. And this is an area that's one mountain that has, it's full of trees that were planted in the Sung Dynasty, which makes them 700 years old. And they've been picked continuously for 700 years. And the teas are quite remarkable. I think you have one.
And you just have one on the shelf over there.
Yeah, we haven't tasted it yet, but...
We have a Phoenix Collection, a Phoenix bird that we didn't include in this tasting, and then we have a number of other Phoenix Mountain oolongs. We've done, for some of you who've come to the other tea tastings, we've done Phoenix Mountain tastings.
And now, of course, with the Phoenix Collection, we have by no means exhausted the pu'ers that we have from the Phoenix Collection. So there's only so much you can taste in an afternoon, and we will be tasting more of them. And in fact, next month we'll be tasting a number of darker, richer teas for the winter months.
The date you're going to do this?
I have it in my.
It's usually the third.
I'll let you know in a minute.
Unless they're having a retreat or something at the Taiyu House, in which case I'll tell you. People
maybe could you comment on the health benefits of the green pu'ers versus the others, the real one?
You know, they both claim health benefits. I think you could do well just drinking them both. You know, I'm not going to make any claims, but. I feel if I drank too much the night before, I usually have a cooked pu'er, a dark pu'er, after that. Or even the same night. I mean, but for I like greens. I mean, I drink a lot of green pu'ers, and they're just lighter on the system.
Yeah. It's very nice.
So that tea tasting next month is Saturday, February 20th.
Oh,
no. So basically 4 weeks from 4 weeks from today.
Will that be pu'er?
It will be. We're going to do some pu'ers. We're going to do a few blacks and some dark oolong, some of the Phoenix.
It's the depth of winter tea tasting.
That's right.
So we're going to light the fires of darker tea.
Right, the rich flavored teas. So
I think you're all really fortunate to have a place like Many Rivers here in town. Believe me, I've been to so many tea houses around the country. And this is—it's like the perfect venue for me. You know, you come in, there's no pressure to buy. There's no rush. You could taste things, and it's ideal situation. And they care about getting the best teas at a reasonable price. So I'm happy to have Many Rivers as a customer, and you know, I think it's great that the community it brings the community together in here, which is really a wonderful benefit.
Yay. Yay. Yeah. 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 Yeah, we appreciate that you've been part of the Many Rivers community for 7 years, 7+ years.
When we had the idea for the tea portion of the store, mm-hmm. we contacted David and went down. I remember the very first tasting that we had, and it was a wonderful experience, and he was a great mentor for us in terms of both showing us a variety of tea, you know, helping us pick our first selection of tea, and just imparting to us early on the looking for high quality tea but at affordable prices, you know, and that combination has been kind of a great guiding theme for us.
And the other thing that I really appreciate. That I picked up immediately when we went to that first tasting with you, and has always been reiterated ever since, is this sense of, and it's something I try to communicate to our customers as well who don't know tea that well, is this idea that there's no right and wrong, you know, written in stone about tea. It's an interactive process that you are experimenting with, deciding for yourself what tastes good, what feels good to your body, and that sort of thing, and David's clarity about that has been an inspiration for him, so that's been great from the start. So, well, thank you all for coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I should point out, I think we have a copy of On This Tea to Rent. We have a copy to buy.
Did you watch it?
I did. I did.
What'd you think?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Testimony.
We have a testimony.
This is,
as you can
rent it. There's a copy up front to rent.
Yeah, Mimi. I think Mimi's got dibs.
This is the last copy here. We'll start the bidding at $30.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for the brew.
It was excellent.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's made near Lagunitas, right?
So is that off of Sir Francis Drake?
Oh, really? I want to go. I live near there, so I want to go.
You seem familiar. Where do you?
Oh, Sausalito.
Sausalito.
But, yeah, but I, you know, drive around and.
Yeah.
So I will point out we have a donation bowl if you care to add to that. That's much appreciated, and we have lots of teas here to buy. So so thank you so much for coming tonight.
And thank you to Bee and Susie who
thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Bee is somewhere. I saw her a moment ago. There she is, over in the corner. And Susie has been was offering some clarity about the wild orange puer, and the she herself has been studying both food and now food, wine, and now tea for quite a while, and has a very subtle development of taste in those areas, and that is much appreciated. And she works with David on the Phoenix Collection.
So I guess they all live at the Phoenix Collective.
There you go.
Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was wonderful. And thank you so much for
coming. I have to try that the next time I come in.
Try which one?
This Phoenix Bird.
We'll do it again.
I like...
Favorite, where